Morning, Tom. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I know you have been putting some miles in there. You know, there was one in particular thing I saw you do recently since you and I spoke last, is you went down and toured the Shoke Mental Health Center with Senator Dale Fowler.
I did, and that's a great facility. I'm happy that it's in the district. It's one of the many state facilities that are in the 58th Senate District. And I've been, when I'm not up in Springfield, I'm trying to get around the district as much as I can and see all the different all the different facilities and resources that we have.
Shoke is an eye opener because you realize, first off, how lucky you and I are. And second, how important that facility is. There are people down there, and it's very easy for those of us who are able-bodied and sound of mind to go about our business each day and to look away while people need help. And the Shoke Mental Health Center, along with the Chest Mental Health Center, but Shoke in particular, I think, the importance of that and the state employees, especially when you look at it with the AG and hearing in court this week as to whether to stop state employees' paychecks. One of those things that we don't talk about every day that's crucial to someone out there in our world.
And that's the thing that has kind of been unfortunate about this budget impasse, is because you have some people that have gotten paid correctly as a result of court orders, and people need to be, state workers need to be paid that are doing the important jobs for our state. But a lot of people who don't have state jobs or don't have any interaction with state services, they don't realize how grave the situation here is in Illinois. It's really the folks that either are working at a state job or people that the state of Illinois owes money to. And the state of Illinois right now, I'd say the backlog is probably about 7 months at least right now for what it's taken the state to pay its bills. But a lot of people haven't realized how absolutely dire the situation is, and that's been unfortunate, because I think that's been one of the factors that has allowed this budget impasse to go on for over 2 years now.
Yeah, I guess you look at it as length of time, or you look at back bills. I talked to the comptroller on Friday, $15 million.
Right. It's right now the situation that we're in right now, the state of Illinois, it's about, my estimation is it's about $8 billion right now is the difference between the money that is either going out the door or what the state owes, and then the money that the state is currently taking in. So we have a very, very serious financial situation. And it's something that I'm hopeful that we can get a budget agreement done so that we can at least start our state moving forward and start the recovery process.
I spoke to Democratic Senator Tim Hastings earlier this morning. The way he defined it, I'm paraphrasing here, but I do not believe inaccurately, is the Senate has really stepped up to address the budget issue in an area that wasn't necessarily its area to be the vanguard, and that they've taken the initiative. So last week, that initiative was represented by four pieces of legislation that were presented. How did you vote on those, Senator?
Well, I voted no on all four of those, and let me give you a little bit of background as to why. The way they structured this compromise was it's 13 different bills, but they all the bills contain language saying unless all of these get passed, none of them take effect. And the reason that they structured it that way was because they wanted to give people the opportunity to vote for what they liked and vote against what they didn't like. My opinion, I thought that was kind of a little bit of a cop out in a way. And I had decided early last week that if I was going to support this package, I was going to own all of it, the good stuff and the bad. If I was going to oppose it, I was going to oppose all of it as well. I was going to vote either 13 yeses or 13 noes. I wasn't going to cherry pick my yeses and noes. I felt like I owed it to the citizens of the 58th Senate District that if this is a package deal, I was going to either be a straight yes or a straight no across the board. And while I was really encouraged that we had made a lot of progress, I didn't feel like the total package as of last week was something that I could support. So I reluctantly voted no on everything because we weren't there yet in terms of it being something that I could support.
Was there a proverbial straw, yes or no, a yes vote that broke the back of your prospect of supporting all these measures? Was there one item in particular that said, that's the straw that broke the proverbial camel's back?
No, it wasn't just one thing. There were a number of things that I had concerns about. And really what I'm looking for in this compromise are four things. I kind of have four lines in the sand that I've communicated to both my leadership, and I actually told that to Democratic Senate President John Cullerton as well when he came and talked to me after the votes. But in order for me to support this compromise, my first condition is it has to balance. I'm not gonna vote for something that includes an unbalanced budget. That's my first condition. The second thing is it cannot be unconstitutional. I'm tired of them monkeying with people's pension benefits. That compromise, as it stands right now, contains what I believe are unconstitutional diminishments to pension benefits. You know, that's frustrating. It doesn't need to be in there. But that's my second condition, is that the compromise has to be constitutional. The third condition that I've set is it's got to have tangible reforms. There has to be something that's going to make Illinois more attractive to the job creators, to make them want to come to our state. We raised taxes in 2011, just a straight tax raise. No reforms at all. Look how that turned out. It didn't work. The problem that's killing Illinois is we have to have people want to come here and create jobs. So unless this compromise contains some fundamental, tangible reforms to make our business climate more attractive, I'm not going to support it. And then the last thing that I'm looking for is I don't like tax increases more than anybody else, but I think the reality is we're going to have them. But you can't ask people to swallow a massive tax increase unless there are significant spending cuts. And the package, as of last week, didn't have significant cuts, in my opinion. So I'm willing to. You know, I'm not going to say no to any new tax increases, but there have to be some spending cuts to try to offset those tax increases.
You know,
so those are what I was looking for, and the deal just didn't seem to get that done.
I'll tell you, when I look at your list, it's pretty doggone logical. It has to be balanced. That's required by the Constitution, which actually leads into number two. Has to be constitutional. Your, of course, version is, we've done things in the past, and we waited 3 years for the Supreme Court to get back to us, and all the while our ship continued to sink because it took them 2 years, we'll call it, to think about it. Reform, clearly we need that, people running for the wall, and taxes, which have literally scared the heck out of everybody.
They've scared the heck out of people, but I just don't think you can ask people to swallow a massive tax increase unless you have shown that you have cut spending. And right now I talked about how the delta between, you know, what we're spending and what we're taking in is about $8 billion. Well, the compromise package, the final best version of it, closed that $8 billion with a $6 billion tax increase and a $2 billion spending cut. I think you need to get that, you know, closer to 4 and 4, you know, at a minimum. People are justifiably livid with the General Assembly with all this out of control spending, without cutting some spending as well.
You know, if the court rules in favor of the Attorney General this week, that would be a precipitating event in ruling, and I'm not sure the outcomes, but of course, I mean, it's pretty clear that that's an attempt to, well, as I said, precipitate action to get something going. And because that would be, I'm trying to think if there's a worse thing that could happen to Illinois, and I'm hard-pressed to think of what it would be.
Well, and the thing that just kind of sticks in my craw about the Attorney General inserting herself into this is, you know, we've we've had discussions, you've had discussions with the Attorney General about, you know, why she doesn't do more to prioritize anti-corruption efforts, and she says, well, it's not my job. It doesn't tell me in statute that I have to do that. Well, you know, from somebody that has had a very limited view of what their job description is, now she's trying to meddle in the budget discussions. You always have discretion as a constitutional officer whether you're going to file suit or not. This is really, you know, I think her sticking her nose into these negotiations when we had been making some progress, I don't personally feel like it's helpful.
Blue Lives Matter, one of the items that you're taking up in legislation.
That's something that Senator Fowler and I have sponsored together. I think that's just common sense. We have hate crimes legislation in Illinois already. You can debate whether or not that's wise. You know, whether that's wise for us to have it, but we do have that system set up. We have hate crimes legislation. The theory behind hate crimes legislation is that there are certain crimes that are meant to intimidate or terrorize a particular group of people, crimes that are meant to try to send a message. And hate crimes legislation addresses those. They say if you're trying to commit a crime in order to send a message and terrorize a group, that is a crime in and of itself. Well, if we're going to have this hate crimes legislation and protect certain classes of individuals, I think it makes sense to protect our law enforcement, our corrections officer, our firefighters, our first responders, those groups who have been subject to attacks simply because they were out protecting us. They've been subject to attacks. I think we need to protect them. We need to give our prosecutors another tool to be able to protect our police officers and our first responders.
You know, and really, you know, think about it, hate because of the color of the skin or the color of their uniform. I mean, because when I was listening to you talk, I envisioned the story. It's weird how things stick in your head. And it was just a picture of a empty police car, and there was a body inside of it. I knew that because somebody had walked up behind a police officer and shot them in the head solely because they were a police officer. And that's the image that I had in mind when you're talking about that, just because of the color of the skin or the color of their uniform. Tomorrow at noon, State of the Budget Address, will there be something said? Will there, or could there, can there be something said that would cause this impasse, this logjam to break up and to see some real movement outside of the Senate's proposed budget items?
I'm going to be there for that address. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm going to be interested in precisely that. I would like to see the governor talk about whether he thinks the negotiations have gotten us to a point where we're going to be able to make a deal on this. You know me, Tom. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. I think that we are close. I think there is a deal to be had. I have been really impressed with the leadership of the Illinois Senate. I think that they have tried to do what everyone wants them to do, which is seek to compromise, seek to find common ground. I would say 95% of the Illinois Senate chamber are really trying to work together. They realize that it will be catastrophic for us to go another 2 years without a budget. So I have been really impressed with almost all of my fellow senators, Republican and Democrat alike. I think that if the voters had a chance to watch the caucus meetings, both parties, they would see people trying to figure out where's the common ground, what can we do, how can we solve this problem with as little suffering as possible.
Right. I think that I saw a term, and I don't remember where it was, Senator Paul Shimp joining us today, and that all the problems in Springfield were caused because of risk-averse politicians. I just saw that term, and it kind of caught my attention, that we're afraid of the decision-making because the risk is out there, because of the dire situation. I think you just alluded to it in a very succinct way. Nobody who wants elected office wants to be responsible for the hard things, the dirty work, the blood that's going to be involved in these cuts.
And the thing is, there is no easy way out at this point. I'm gonna share something personal really, really quickly just so that your listeners know that I'm not insensitive to this stuff. I lost my mom in 1999 to cancer. She was only 53, never got to see her grandkids, daughter-in-laws, any of that stuff. It was after a long, just awful, treatment process. But we are at a point, this state, our financial situation, we're almost like we're at stage four cancer again now. And the problem is, we're at the stage where the cure is almost as bad as the disease. We are not going to get our state healthy again without some suffering. That's the mindset, unfortunately, that I'm looking at with this. It's not going to be easy. There's no pain-free way out of this, and that's kind of the mindset that I have when I'm evaluating, what the options are for our state.
Senator Paul Shim, Paul, really appreciate your time this morning.